Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly.
And I'm Matt Dancona.
And this is the Two Mats for the week ending Friday, the 15th of March, the Ides of March.
Beware those Ides. Look out for those Ides in full.
Yeah, a podcast in which Matt Dancona says the words, "Bring back Boris." But that may well have been taken out of context.
Taken out of context.
What did we talk about in this episode, Matt?
We talked about extremists and we talk about racism.
Yeah. And photo editing.
And photo editing.
We did. And that's probably the most clicky thing, isn't it? The photo editing.
Again, you know, our position on clickbait is that we deplore it. And yet...
We depend on it.
We love it.
If we were being cynical and wanted as many people as possible to
imagine
click on this
that. Play that thought experiment through.
What would we call this episode?
Extreme theories about Kate.
About Kate. Extreme theories. Is Kate enough?
About princess.
About Princess Kate.
About Princess Kate.
That'll get the nutters clicking.
Oh, that's going to get them in.
So if you're any new nutters listening to this...
clicking on their tinfoil hats.
You fell for it.
You fell for it.
So welcome to the Two Mats, episode 36, Extreme Theories about Princess Kate.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
So, Matt, another terrific week for the Tories.
It's been an absolute blinder for them. Possibly one of the great weeks in the history of the Conservative Party. Where to begin? Shall we start with... I mean, it's been dominated by this row about Frank Hester, mm-hmm. software tycoon, who's given quite a lot of money to the Tory party and also said some really horrible racist and sexist things.
Yeah.
And it sort of all came to a head in terms of political drama at PMQs. And Stephen Flynn... the SNP's leader of Westminster.
He was good, wasn't he?
He was very good. He kind of landed it. So maybe producer Matt can give us a blast of that.
Why is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom putting money before morals?
Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, as I said, the comments were wrong. The gentleman in question has apologised for them, and that remorse should be accepted.
Stephen Flynn!
This is complete rubbish. The gentleman in question apologised for being rude. He wasn't rude. He was racist. He was odious. And he was downright bloody dangerous. Yep. Now, on Monday, the number 10 said, "We've seen an unacceptable rise in extremist activity which is seeking to divide our society and hijack our democratic institutions." Isn't extremism that we should all be worried about? The views of those Tory donors that we've read about this week.
Yeah. It's true that, isn't it? There's this bizarre conflation of two Tory things going on. There was this scandal about the racism from this huge donation. And then in parallel, there is them moving against a sort of more nebulous, extreme policy against groups.
So we'll try and knit them together because it's an ironic collision, to say the least. So where are we? Frank Hester appears to be probably the biggest donor the Tories have ever had. He's a software guy, chief executive of a group called the Phoenix Partnership, which has given one... at least 100 million quid's worth of NHS and prison contracts. And he's given, at that time, we thought 10 million quid to the Tories. We're recording this on Thursday and today, and my former colleague at Tortoise, their political editor, the excellent Kat Neelan, has just reported today that there's another 5 million sort of circling over the Tory airport waiting to
like,
land.
Like, right? Aid.
Exactly.
Aid so, over Gaza, dropping into
dropped onto Rishi's,
Downing Street.
Yeah. Into Rishi's kitchen. So if it's 15 million, it's, you know, becomes that much more embarrassing for the Tories. Mm. And you know, particularly in view of the calls for them to give it back. Just to scroll back, I suppose we should, just for people who haven't been following it, kind of go back over how we got where we are. Guardian reports on Monday that in 2019, Frank Hester, this software tycoon, said, talking about another female executive at another company, this is the alleged quote, "It's like trying not to be racist, but you see Diane Abbott on the TV and you're just like, I hate, you just want to hate all black women because she's there. And I don't hate all black women at all, but I think she should be shot."
Hmm. Let's pause.
It's breathtaking, isn't it?
That you would say that in private would be despicable enough. That you would say that in front of colleagues in a workplace is just beyond credibility. The arrogance of the man.
I mean, it has been taken up by the Met, and rightly
so.
Yeah.
And also, you might come to this, so sorry if I'm jumping ahead, but let's just make the point, because some of the language of mitigation around here has involved phrases like, this was half a decade ago.
Okay.
It's 5 years. It's 2019.
At the heart of, yeah, exactly. 2019, as if that was, you know, there was still Jim Crow and exactly. Rosa Parks riding on a bus.
We were all a bit racist in 2019, weren't we?
Yes, exactly. Les Dawson and
for God's
the comedians.
Sake.
2019 was the year that Boris Johnson became Prime Minister.
Yeah, although maybe that erodes maybe that's the case probably. Of it. Yeah.
But I think, to your point, that what followed was almost as jaw-dropping as the original story, which was there's a kind of festival of gaslighting going on.
Yeah.
So Lord Marland, former Tory treasurer, tells LBC that Hester cannot be a racist because, quote, he does a lot of business in Jamaica. He does business in Malaysia, in Bangladesh and places like that. Now, I might be a bit stupid, like, but I think that's not actually how you test.
It's like a fast show punchline.
It is,
isn't it?
Isn't it? No, I've been to Malaysia.
I've been to Jamaica.
Could possibly be racist. Then Graham, a series of deeply embarrassed ministers follow. So Graham Stewart, the pensions minister on the Today programme on Tuesday, says, "I find it absolutely unacceptable, but invited to call it racist, says, I hesitate to stick that particular label on it." Then, and this was the one that I really couldn't believe, because I still see Mel Strider's sort of at least semi-sane work and pension secretary, cabinet member. Mel Strider says, "I think the critical point here is I don't think that what he was saying was a gender-based or a race-based comment, but it was clearly inappropriate." Now, sorry, yet again, right, am I having a stupidity attack here? If you say that Diane Abbott makes you want to hate all black women, there's a bit of race-based and gender-based in there, isn't it?
Look, Mel Stride's not an idiot. Why would Mel Stride say such a thing?
Well, now I think we are at the bone. Because as you said, there was, and around this, there was lots of really insultingly mild language being used, like it's intemperate or unfortunate or regrettable. Mm. And then finally it becomes untenable because Kwasi Kwarteng, former chancellor and
I remember him.
Ruiner of the...
My mortgage broker remembers
ruiner
him.
Of the economy. Yeah. Quite rightly, said on Politics Live on Tuesday it was racist, which it obviously is. And then Kemi Badenoch came in at about 4:19, 4:20 on the Tuesday and said, yep, it's racist. At which point Number 10 and everyone else had to admit that the Emperor had no clothes.
Yeah.
You know? So the question is, why were they not admitting something that was blindingly obvious? And I think there are two reasons. One is they don't want to hand the money back.
Yeah, because maybe they haven't got it.
Got it. I mean, 10 million is a lot for them.
Yeah.
And they're aware that there is precedent. You know, if you think all the way back to 1997, when Blair took money from Bernie Eccleston, Formula One, and they got Formula One got an exemption on tobacco advertising, it was a big scandal.
That's right.
Labour gave the 1 million quid back.
Yeah.
So there is precedent for giving money back. And I think that pressure on them to give it back will grow. And if Kat Neilan's story travels, which I think it will, that 5 million will surely not be, you know, they can't take that.
They must also be worried about, well, if they give that back, then every other donor, everyone will go rummaging through their social media history.
And I think that's where we're really at the problem, which is that there's an obvious analogy in all of this. If you think back to a couple of weeks ago when Lee Anderson was still in the Tory party, and he said those outrageous things about Sadiq Khan, Mayor of London, and said that the Islamists have got control of Sadiq Khan. Obviously Islamophobic. But Oliver Dowden went on Laura Koonsberg's show and the same act said that what Lee Anderson had said was not intending to be Islamophobic. And I think we mentioned this on a previous pod that Michael Tomlinson, the illegal immigration minister, went on LBC and just refused to say it was Islamophobic. He kept saying it was wrong. Nick Ferrari, much to his credit, cut off Michael Tomlinson. What's going on? I think Jess Phillips got somewhere close to the truth. She said, Labour MP, conservatives are so afraid of calling out racism when their own do it because they want to be seen as a little bit racist. It's not because they don't want to give the money back. Well, I think they don't want to give the money back, actually, but it's because they are worried about offending racists. And I think that's about right.
Yeah.
Because so much conservative policy and identity now depends upon culture wars and doing and saying things that are actually, in practice, xenophobic and racist, but cannot be admitted to be so.
Yeah.
Small boats, Rwanda, you know, they're now offering $3,000.
Yeah, I know.
The great deterrent effect is now being turned into an incentive, you know.
It's incredible. And that's passed without much comment.
No, you know, it's just another day.
We've normalised the idiocy of that.
In Tory idiocy land.
Yeah.
And I think the point here is very important. And having spent a week in the States, it was a similar thing there, which is these currents of bigotry are really strong in politics now in the West. But it's very important not to name it.
Yeah.
Once you say something is racist,
yeah,
clearly that's a huge step. You know, it's a huge step. It's a huge label to apply.
Mm.
So politicians will do unbelievable verbal gymnastics to avoid using words like racist and Islamophobic. I think that they're mad to avoid it because, you know, what was said in this case was so obviously racist.
Yes. There's a difference, isn't there, between... what I find very interesting in this conversation is whether some... I mean, it's clearly racist. There's no two ways about it. You know, once you throw in an analogy with all black women, right, that's clearly racist and misogynistic. You can't get away from that.
There's just no way around it.
But where they seem to be wriggling is whether he is a racist. And Gary Young, the brilliant former
Guardian columnist, now a professor at...
pointed his Twitter followers, myself included, to a brilliant video, and we must put it in the show notes, about a guy, somebody smooth, can't remember his first name, but he's explaining the difference between... Or what he's pointing out is why you shouldn't get into the argument about whether someone is a racist. What you should do is deal with the specific racism. And the reason isn't because you should be afraid of, demeaning or calling somebody a racist because they may not be. The reason is that you give them a chance to get off the hook if you call them a racist, because it's such a vague, amorphous thing. And it allows so many defences, all of which we've seen in the last few days. People say, oh no, he does business in Jamaica, he knows lots of black people, he's the nicest man I've ever seen, he's got a very diverse, he donates to the most diverse cabinet in history, how can he be a racist?
Exactly.
So what we need to focus on is the specific racism. Focus on the act, not the person.
And there's a great book on this, which is actually about 20 years old now, called Racism Without Racists,
right,
by a guy called Eduardo Bonilla Silva.
Yeah.
And it really nails all this, the point that Gary was obviously making, you know, which is that you've got to concentrate on the act or the statement.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as you say, you have someone saying, oh, but, you know, he used to go out with a black girl or
some of my best friends are black, you know, the classic
neighbor is black or, you know, well, so what?
Well, and also, you know, Frank Hester has still yet to acknowledge that what he said was racist.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, he said, as far as I've read, he has said, oh, it was rude and it was, you know, it was an outburst, I shouldn't have said it, blah, blah, blah. Hasn't said, yes, that was racist. And in fact, his latest statement to The Guardian goes on to say that he thinks that, yes, all of this kind of division based on geography or race or faith or all of this stuff is abhorrent. However, and it's always,
however,
as my wife says, you know, everything after but is bullshit. Right?
Yes.
And so, but I must say,
what Charlie Hebdo calls le mai.
Yeah, le mai, the big, the massive but. But we should be able to playfully cajole each other upon our differences. That's what our great society is based on, you know. And we've all been victims of that playful cajoling that actually is alienating and hateful, you know.
Yes, yeah, so for Diane Abbott, you know, has been, she's the longest serving black MP, I think.
She's the first black MP.
The first black MP.
Absolute trailblazer.
And she is, has been the subject of racist vilification, death threats, and God knows what for years.
Yeah.
I mean, traumatizingly so.
Yeah.
So to sort of characterize what he said as just a bit of banter,
yeah,
it just doesn't even begin to wash.
So now the Tories are trying to create this this sort of Venn diagram where you've got plain speaking and you've got culture war, and in the middle there's a sort of grey area where it's a little bit racist. It's not, it's not full blown racism, but it's sort of plain speaking and it's playful and okay.
Exactly,
you know?
And also slightly bemused, stroke angry, actually, by this idea that if you apologise, no matter what you apologise for,
move on.
So Michael Gove selling the new extreme anti-extremism package this morning that you mentioned earlier, Matt, and it was obviously challenged. You know, is Frank Hester an extremist under your new definition, Secretary of State? Michael Gove says, well, I think it's time for a bit of Christian forgiveness, right? Well, is it, actually?
Well, why doesn't he forgive to all the people he's just trying to outlaw today?
Exactly. I don't
double standard.
Well, yes. I mean, massive double standard for someone who's, as we now know, about to drop 5 million into their bank account. But I think it is a huge problem, and I think that it's actually eating the Tory party, this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's intrinsically bad. It's horrible. We shouldn't have people in public life saying things like this.
Do you think the reason it's eating them up so voraciously and rapidly is that Sunak is incapable of getting a grip of it because he doesn't know how to...
That, and I think that there's been a huge change, which is... And bear with me, because it's worth tracking it back. So you go back to 1968, and Enoch Powell makes the famous, appalling Rivers of Blood speech. Ted Heath sacks him from the shadow cabinet. And that continues to be the sort of crash barrier for British politics for decades. You don't go down that route.
Yeah.
You know, people who get near it get really badly burnt and often exiled. And I think that all changed with two things. One was the arrival of social media, which made anything possible. And the other was the enlargement of the EU, because that gave UKIP the opportunity to go anti-immigrant without being notionally racist. Now, we all know they were being racist. What they were trying to do was mobilise racism and turn it into what became Brexit. In my view, I think that was a massive force in Brexit.
Yeah.
But they were able to say, we're not being racist, we're just saying, you know, there shouldn't be as many Romanians and Hungarians. It detached the idea of being massively against immigration from the automatic assumption that that was to do with ethnicity. At least cosmetically so.
Yes.
And so the Conservative Party became suddenly able, in its own view, post-Cameron, to say things like this. And it's got out of control.
Yeah.
It's got out of control. And unfortunately, the sort of populist nativist style that Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and others have cultivated, and that Sunak, to his everlasting shame, has emulated, even though it's not his sort of natural beat, has now got them to this point where the budget barely happened, did it?
I mean, who cares?
I mean, it was just a beat between various rows about race and identity.
One of the weird things about this phenomena in the Tory party is that the hostility towards outsiders from the Home Office has come from three successive British Asians.
Yes.
Sajid Javid, Priti Patel, Suella Braverman. And I think it is worth thinking about, has that created...
It's permissive.
How can this be racist? Yes. Because look, we are of colour, you know, yes. And we are... But it's a definite bizarre phenomenon where, I mean, Sajid Javid felt like he was hardcore at the time, although he was superseded massively by his successors. Where you get Suella Braverman kind of leading the charge in this toxic language strikes me as, you know, odd, you know.
It is odd, although I think that there's a sort of drawbridge pulling up element sometimes in all of this, which is very tasteless and it's a delicate thing to address, but it is there.
Yeah.
And again, you see it in the States where, I mean, one of the strangest developments has been the way in which African Americans have started to become more and more concerned about what's going on at the southern border.
Right.
And the old Democrat assumption that they would be pro-immigration. Actually, from their point of view, they've been there as long as the whites. They are American, you know, why should they feel differently?
And it would certainly be a racist thing to say that because they are British Asians, they can't hold strong views on immigration.
That's right.
However, it does seem
it is very,
and I wonder whether white conservative members have looked and said, "Well, it must be okay." You know, it must be okay because they're people of colour saying this.
It's undoubtedly helpful in a situation like this that every one of the ministers or senior Tories I mentioned went on to say, and of course, you know, the main thing is that we carry on supporting the first Hindu prime minister of this country, Rishi Sunak.
But this is precisely my point. That has been used as a direct mitigation for this guy's racist comments by saying, how can he be racist? He has funded the most ethnically diverse cabinet in British history. Bullshit.
That's right.
Bullshit.
And even if he has, who cares? Yeah. I mean, the racism is racism.
Of course.
I find it quite extraordinary, in spite of everything that's preceded it, that we're having this discussion at all in 2024.
Yeah.
You know, that their biggest donor is capable of saying this.
Yeah.
You know, I think he should lose his OBE. I think they should hand the money back.
Sorry, I didn't realise he had one.
He's got an OBE for services to healthcare.
Right.
I mean, he is absolutely...
Services to trousering hundreds of millions of pounds from healthcare via government. So, I mean, this is what gets lost in the miasma.
Yes.
Put all the racism to one side. Again, you've got a guy who has made, I think it was 135 million quid from NHS contracts.
It's not a bad return on 10, 15
back,
million, is it?
Throwing back 10% to the people who gave him the contracts. Well, in any mafia movie, you'd call that a backhander. But
it's a finder's fee. It's a finder's fee.
I mean, honestly.
The rate of return is very good.
There should be a law that says if you are a major recipient of government contracts, you are forbidden from funding the people who are giving you those bloody contracts.
Yes.
Of course you are.
I mean, that's a kind of basic thing. Of course, the problem is that they wouldn't give any money.
Yeah.
There are some decent donors, but... Not that many.
There should at least be a kind of curtain between the you know, a trust fund where it's separate from.
Oh God,
I mean, honestly,
no. I mean, the whole thing stinks. The only upside to this latest hideous event is that I think it just compounds the sense of a government that is just heading towards oblivion.
Yeah, yeah. How do you think Starmer's performed over this?
Fine. I mean, he had his own problem, you know, during the Rochdale by-election, you know, taking time with the candidate there. But I think, to be fair to him, one of the things that he has done as leader is call an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
And
well, he called Diana Abbott an anti-Semite.
Right.
Kicked her out.
I mean, there's a whole complex thing about you know, how that relates, but I think he has been commendably sort of frank about this, and I hope he continues to be, because there's going to be more of this. I mean politics is now the guardrails have fallen.
Just before we go for a quick break, what do you think? There's been some talk about an early May election. Obviously, as every day passes, that becomes less likely. I can't imagine this scandal's made it any more likely. But what do you think? Where are we heading?
My impression is that we're reaching a point now where anything can be said. Mm. You know, people are talking about bringing Boris back, or maybe Sunak should resign and Cameron should lead the Tory party again from the Lords.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, a May election, it's not going to happen.
Let's also remember, while we're all backslapping ourselves about pulling up Frank Hester for his racist comments, that Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, once said, picking an ease with watermelon smiles.
Yes, and called women in burkas, bank robbers, and
letterboxes.
Yeah. You know, this is not new.
And we elected that guy, folks. So
an 80-seat majority.
Let's just remember who we are as
Remember where we came from.
All right, on that word of admonishment, is that a word?
That'll do.
On that note of admonishment to us all.
A note of admonishment from the founder.
A quick break and we'll come back soon to talk about photographs.
Photographs.
This podcast is brought to you, as ever, by the New European Newspaper. And we've got a great offer for you. Do you like the New European Newspaper, Matt?
Well, I like working for it and I enjoy reading it. So it's a double thumbs up from me.
So you're already a subscriber. So this
I actually am. Yeah.
This is of no interest to you because you'll feel like you're missing out.
No, but
it's a great offer.
I find it validating.
Okay. Well, listen, if you're not a subscriber, you really should be because you'll be supporting fantastic independent journalism that you'll actually enjoy getting posted through your letterbox every week. And as an exclusive offer for listeners of the Two Mats podcast, we've got free signed copies of James O'Brien's hardback book, which is a brilliant book, isn't
it? Great book. The book.
How They Broke Britain, and that's worth £20. And you can get that by subscribing for as little as £1 a week for all of our digital stuff. But if, like me, you love getting your hands on a physical newspaper every single week, you can get that delivered to your door for just an extra £1 a week, and that's a saving of around 80% on the cost of what you'd pay at the newsstand. So please do the right thing. Subscribe to The New European. Go to theneweuropean.co.uk/2mats. That's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S. And tell them we sent you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
So, have you seen the Princess of Wales lately?
No.
Manipulated or otherwise?
Only in her artificial intelligence created form. I'm not too sure how real that is.
There's some mad stuff going on and some mad theories about what might be going on. But I think the truth might be a lot simpler. But yeah, we can't know, and we don't know.
I mean, this really was an unforced error, wasn't it? So you know, she'd been in hospital since, what was it, January the 16th, abdominal surgery, and then a lot of speculation. Didn't help, of course, that the king was ill with cancer as well. There was a kind of general sense of what's going on.
Yeah.
So she posts a picture of herself with her kids, George, Charlotte and Louis. And within hours, social media has just torn it to pieces.
Yeah.
That there are all these inconsistencies. I don't have the eye to spot these things, but the list, you know, is incredible.
Well, I'm a dab hand at Photoshop.
You spotted it.
And so, to be fair, I didn't spot it at the time because I have zero interest in the royal family generally. But
so you didn't look at the cardigans but and the foliage.
I didn't get my magnifying glass over the sleeve.
Hold on a second. Where's her wedding ring?
But once you did see it, I mean, what was surprising was that none of the massive photo agencies spotted it before social media. But anyway, once they did spot it and all the kill notices, so-called, were issued, and you looked at it, and it was some real cack-handed kind of Photoshop work. So it resonated that it had been done by her because it was clearly amateur, you know, and anybody who wanted to pull the wool over people's eyes would have done a decent job of it. And we wouldn't be talking about it today.
No, so. I mean, it was obviously amateur art and embarrassing and very unusual for a senior member of the royal family to issue a kind of grovelling apology like that.
I
do occasionally experiment with editing. Is one for the ages, really, isn't it? I think we're going to hear that phrase in stand-up routines from time
to
time.
Stalin's press office. Stalin,
yes, I do occasionally.
People disappeared.
I think he's been edited. Yeah. It's interesting. I think there are a couple of things which are really interesting about it. I mean, one is that, you know, Walter Badgett said you shouldn't let daylight in upon magic. Well, that happened basically with the 1953 coronation being televised, and then there was the documentary they did in the 60s, the royal family. So ever since then, they've been living in a goldfish bowl.
Yeah.
I think that they haven't, the firm, whatever you want to call it, has not really got its head around social media yet.
Uh-huh.
And there was a wonderful phrase by Helen Lewis in a piece in The Atlantic this week, who described all the Kate truthers, as they've become known, with all these mad conspiracies. Yeah. Helen described them, this latest iteration, as QAnon for wine mums, which I think is
perfect. Yeah,
typical classic Helen Lewis, you know, just perfect. I don't think the royal family and the advisors around it get what's meant by extremely online. That there are a lot of people who don't believe anything they're told and spend unhealthy amounts of time online.
Yeah.
And they're not just people in basements living with their parents, you know, with no jobs. And this is all over the world. And it was a sort of disaster waiting to happen. And I don't like the excuse that's often used in all sorts of situations, particularly political, is, oh, he's getting the wrong advice. You know, poor old Boris, he doesn't have the right advisors. Poor old Rishi doesn't have the right advisors. But I do actually think in this instance that it's extraordinary to me. When you think of the dragoons of advisors there are in Buckingham Palace and Kensington Palace, and I was just looking up some of them. The private secretary to the Prince of Wales, William, is called Jean-Christophe Grey. He used to work for Cameron. The private secretary to Princess of Wales, Lieutenant Colonel Tom White, used to work for the Queen, the late Queen.
Right.
Lee Thompson, their communications secretary, formerly of NBC.
Yeah.
Right. So from outside the establishment, a media savvy person. Digital and social lead they have a digital and social lead called David Watkins. Right. So where were these people?
Yeah.
Where were these people? Just to, I mean, if you say, right, the strategy is everyone's going bananas online about the Princess of Wales, we're going to do a picture. Wouldn't it have been favourite for one of them? Maybe to have a look at it first?
Yeah. Well, maybe they did, but they were operating under, I mean, look, I mean, There's the weirdness in all of this, because this could all be solved in a jiffy if she released the original unedited photograph.
I agree.
And that's what people are saying is, well, this is what is causing the bonfire.
Let's just have the original.
And if I was advisor to Kate and William, I'd say, just put the bloody original out with whatever is wrong with it, but put it out and let people see that the mistake, you know, whatever you adjusted was for vanity, but for no other reason than that. But the fact that they haven't done that, it's such an obvious quick fix, makes everybody think, well, there must be more to it. So then you get all these other theories. Like there was a big theory doing the rounds that she had macked in
it was a Vogue
cover of Vogue magazine. Yes. And there were reputable people. So there's a bloke I know who I won't name to spare his blushes, but a very smart former digital officer who tweeted out to a lot of followers, this is pixel perfect, it's a definite match. And then a day later was looking at somebody a bit more considerate saying, actually, no, it's not, the teeth are all different, the lines in the face are different.
It's just not the same.
It's not the same. It just happens to be the same woman smiling, you know.
Yes, so there is a vague similarity.
There's that. Then there was the mismatch of the bricks in the snapshot of the car where her profile was seen.
That's right, yes.
The bricks were different. No, they're not. The face was taken from another photograph. No, it wasn't. They've spoken to the photographer. There were all these things. The Telegraph actually did a great job of debunking them one by one. And it's all baloney. However, that just shows you how people will rush in and fill a void. And the way to stop the void is to put up the original, but they won't do it. So what's the big mystery? No one knows. In the States, there is absolute obsession with this story.
Yes. Now. Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
They are going nuts about it. And it's all on William's having an affair. They're not talking. Kate and him are getting divorced. She's been disappeared somehow. I mean, it's getting more and more bizarre.
Not a single person asked me about Keir Starmer, but everyone I talked to asked me about this.
Incredible.
Before the picture.
Incredible.
I mean, that was what they wanted to know. And I suppose what has happened is the bigness of what has happened to the way we think and act and communicate has yet to permeate some institutions. And I think what's happened is that online life has kind of transported us all back to Dealey Plaza in November 1963. We all live in Dallas. Yeah. We're all in the assassination zone of John F. Kennedy. And we're all looking at the grassy knoll. Yeah. And we're all looking at the man with the umbrella. And we're all asking if the magic bullet works. And about everything.
Yeah.
So what used to be a sort of... it was a hobby, wasn't it? It was hobbyistic to be obsessed by the JFK assassination. Has now become a way of life.
That's right.
Is that you kind of... The minute a Mother's Day picture of an unwell woman drops...
Yeah.
Everyone goes crazy. And I was just looking, scrolling before we started, and I see AFP, one of the biggest agencies in the world, has declared Kensington Palace no longer a trusted source.
Madness.
And I think it's funny, but it's also, I hope it's a lesson learned to them, because this is not going to be the last time this happens. And this is a relatively benign version of something they're going to have to face at every turn now.
Well, also, can I just make the point that, do you know David Hockney?
Yes.
Greatest living British artist, is brilliant on the subject of photography, in that he says people come to it with an assumption that the camera doesn't lie. The camera always lies.
That's what it does.
You know, Hockney does these amazing montages of photographs where to make what is actually a visual representation of a scene, the most famous one being a crossroads in I think it's in Joshua Tree, Death Valley, somewhere like that in California. He's got about 2,500 different photographs to make one single image that actually looks like that road looks like. So the camera always lies. Photo editing always happens to some degree. There was a woman on the media show on the radio from The Guardian the other day saying that they have very strict rules at The Guardian about not manipulating photographs. But every single photograph is lightened, darkened, color corrected, cropped to give a visual representation. You know, as a journalist, as a production journalist, someone who's good at making newspaper pages come alive, I know very well that you can tilt a headshot 5 degrees to the left, it'll make it look
to give it completely
like
different
one
impact.
Expression. 5 degrees to the right, it'll give it a different expression. Some of the most famous photographs in the world are fake. The picture of Vinnie Jones grabbing Paul Gascoigne's balls in that football match and Gazza turning towards the camera and yelping is faked. His face is cut out of a later image.
And yet it's one of the most iconic sports photos of all time.
People don't know that, but when they're looking at it, it's fake. Now, what the person putting that image together wanted to do was to give the best representation of that story. And that's what they did. But it's a fake image. If you're looking for absolute perfect truth and clarity, don't look for it in a photograph. They're all fake. But in this day and age now, this is only going to get worse and worse and worse when you see what AI can now do.
Oh, God, yeah.
Did you remember that photograph of the Pope dressed up in a rapper's... I thought it was real the first time I saw it because I thought it's exactly the kind of stunt Pope Francis would pull.
He's done it. Yeah. He's finally gone to Pope Julius the First.
Pope Jay-Z.
Pope Julius.
Pope J the Z.
Pope J the Z. No, but you're right. I mean, it's not... It's improbable, but it's not implausible.
No. But let's go back also to what do we know for sure in this story is that she underwent a serious operation, we don't know what, and the palace said she'll be out of action till Easter. Yeah. Well, last time I checked my calendar, Easter's still a few weeks away. So give the poor girl a chance, please.
Yes, and don't assume that the absence... I mean, this is where being extremely online drives people quite literally insane. The absence of more information, the absence of more data is not actually a sign of malevolence.
Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't mean that something wicked has gone. It doesn't mean she's been abducted by aliens.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that suddenly turned against the COVID vaccine. It doesn't mean that Bill Gates has taken her off to an island. You know, none of these things.
It might just mean they've thought, tell them to mind their own bloody business.
Yes, and I mean.
And why not?
And God, they must be regretting that they met them halfway.
Yeah.
But I do think, and it's just a mechanical point, but I think that I hope there's a lesson learned here that the business of picture editing should not be left to the subject in any senior public role now, because it's just too, the consequences are too facile. There really are.
One last point to make is that this, I suspect, is about vanity, but it's also about control as well.
It's about control.
You know, a photograph taken by William of the family, released circuitously straight through to the agencies. Next time they might just stick it on social media and bypass the agencies altogether.
Yes. But
it's about them wanting to control stuff. And we're seeing it, you know, to me, I couldn't care less about what the royal family do or don't do. But when governments are trying to control photo shoots, which Rishi Sunak has taken to a new level, when sports events only allow their own photographer in to cover it and they hand out only the photos you're allowed to see, which Chelsea Football Club did a decade ago, when politicians and all these people with a vested interest want to control where photojournalism has previously had a free hand.
Yes.
I think it's really, really dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, especially as he, you know, uses now baby's first lectern from Hamley's to do all his speeches. I mean...
Well, at least he's not borrowing people's cars now and pretending to fill them up full of petrol and stuff like this.
It's progress, isn't it?
It is progress.
Well done, Rishi.
And on that congratulatory note to Rishi Sunak, we would ask you, our dear listeners, get your questions in, any feedback to 2matts@tnepublishing.com. That's the number 2, MATTS@tnepublishing.com. Or if you listen on Spotify, and you don't have to listen on Spotify, but if you happen to, you can message us there very easily. And that's what subscriber Nick did, who says, "Hello, 2matts. There are a number of issues that you are clearly passionate about." Well, multitude, I would say, rather than a number. But anyway, there are a number of issues you are clearly passionate about. What volunteer work do you do to support some of the causes you discuss, e.g. rough sleeping? Well, I do this podcast for a start. I'm not making much money out of this, mate. But
I consider this to be a community service. we dispense wisdom.
We do dispense wisdom. Actually, I am about... This isn't blowing trumpets, but I'm about to volunteer at my local school to help kids with maths and English.
So that's every week.
It's only an hour a week, but
that counts for both of us.
Yeah, good. Okay, so thank you for that.
Nick. We're doing help.
I'm sure it wasn't written cynically, but anyway, there we go. We are back with a new Q&A episode on Sunday. Remember our subscription offer. If you like this podcast, you will love The New European. Just go to thenew.co.uk/2Matts, and you can get the newspaper delivered every week to your door with Matt Dancona's fabulous column and a lot more besides for just £2 a week. That's a bargain, isn't it?
I sponsor a stall at Cat Rescue. Does that count?
That definitely, do you?
Yeah.
That, well, there we go. Took him a little while to make that one up, folks, but there we go.
No, that's absolutely true.
There we go. Brilliant. Well, there we go. Volunteering, fantastic.
Volunteering.
Do it. Thank you, as ever, to our producers, led by Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, with support from Ollie Peart. And until next week...
It's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.